This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 7th of June, 1954. The title of this lecture is Scientology Workbook. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Thank you. How are we getting along with the seminars?
Fine.
Good. Good. Fine. Fine. Anybody exteriorized that didn't come that way? Huh? Oh, don't tell me.
Gee, you mean I got to stand up here today and do it?
It's not very hard, by the way. All you do
is just assume that you're back of your head and take a look at your head.
The first thing, why don't you try it right now? Just assume you're back of your head and take a look at it. A single difference. Did you do that? All right. A single difference between a case that doesn't exteriorize and a case that does is the case that has difficulty with exteriorization. Is waiting to be reassured or something that they can be or something like that. It's a little bit mysterious why they do, because nobody's going to reach into their heads and put them back there. That's a fact. Nobody is. There's a fellow was doing it back east some time ago, and he went down to Washington. He was practicing on some politicians, and he had so many failures that he finally quit it. He couldn't find anything in their heads. But actually, that's about all there is to it, so it's very simple, so I want to make sure that you do it this afternoon. I want to talk to you right now, however, on a publication which you have in your hands, and which is the Scientology Workbook. Any two people can do it. The reason I want to talk to you about this book is the fact that you may be using it, and when you get out of here, you may want to train somebody how to use it in order to give you a little more processing, something like that. And this book is actually a package of processing. There will be several other books like this as time goes along this year. This book is several of the processes that are developed in the advanced clinical courses, and they're put together in such a way that they're fairly easy to direct people with. The basic process of this Scientology workbook is what we call viewpoint straight wire, and that's merely based upon a very interesting mechanic. That mechanic is you don't have space unless you can look. If you're not willing to look at anything, you're not going to look. Well, that's remarkable. The definition of space, let's get right down to brass tacks here now. The definition of space is the viewpoint of dimension, as I mentioned to you yesterday, all right? If space is a viewpoint of dimension and you do not conceive yourself to have very much space, why, you, of course, must have some reason why you don't have very much space. And if it is a viewpoint of dimension, then the reason must be totally contained in what you're willing to view. That's actually all there is to it. You see that. If you're unwilling to find, occupying that space, several types of objects, if you're unwilling to contemplate vast distances and so forth, and I mean you, I don't mean your body, you, of course, will not have any space. And if you don't have any space, getting 3 feet of space between you and the back of your head will be very difficult. Now, you can see how this is. If you don't have any space, you can't put any space anyplace. Now, the only space you're going to have is the space you're going to put someplace. And the way you put space someplace is to look at something. And if you're willing to look, you're going to have space. And if you're not willing to look, you're not going to have space. And that's all there is to it. Now, this is the value of perception. Perception is the keynote in all processing. And a chap's ideas can be rearranged somewhat. His somatics can be rearranged. His problems can be rearranged. But if he doesn't get a change of perception, we can't honestly say that he is doing a tremendous amount of progress with his case. He might feel more relaxed about existence. And that, in essence, was the total goal of psychotherapy. Well, in view of the fact that we're not in the field of psychotherapy, we're just also including psychotherapy in we, you see, don't have to have the goal of psychotherapy, which is just make the fellow, you know, get over the idea that his mother is a cow or something. Just, you know, he had that fixation. We get him over that. We take 2 years to do it. We charge him $9,975 or some such figure. He sits there for 4 hours a week, an hour a day for 4 days per week for 2 years. And at the end of that time, he has a vague notion that there might be some other reason why his mother seems to be a cow. We're not interested in that type of processing. The keynote of the processing which we're doing is ability, higher capability. And one of the reasons we have apparently continually altered in the public eye, you know, I mean, why we apparently keep changing our minds and so forth, that we just keep finding higher and higher levels of capability. There's hardly a person here, there are very few people here right now who don't measure up pretty well to, very early, much earlier goals. You know, they're pretty good. They've gotten right along. And certainly there's nobody here who would even vaguely measure up to, you know, what they would consider any difficulty to be remedied by Freudian analysis. I mean, you're all in excess of that. Way in excess of it. And we just keep finding these higher and higher capabilities. What can a fellow do? Well, a fellow can work for 21 hours a day and sleep three. He can get along on practically, a minimum of food. He can get along on in life without having colds. And he doesn't have to look forward to desperate illnesses and operations and things like that. We can accomplish these things, but how high can you get? How far up can you go? And the answer to that is, I don't know. I know how well off preclears can get, and that's pretty darn well off. I know that there's been some slight difference in my beingness here in the last few years, many years. From year to year, I notice a difference now and then, slight difference. But how high can we go with processing? Well, it's certainly a lot higher than we are. But how high can it go? Well, operating Thetan is a very nebulous statement, believe me. That's more nebulous than a Dianetic clear, believe me. A lot more nebulous. But this little book here is devoted to a direct process which will take a case at any level, providing he can even vaguely communicate with the auditor. That proviso. We have to go down in the mimicry below that level. You know, we can't talk to the fellow. We have to mimic him. There's even a process down in those lines. No scratches on my face here, Des. My little boy, I was using the process on him last night. I think he's about 5 months old now, 4 months. And Quentin wasn't feeling well, so I used this process on him. And it cheered him right up and made him very healthy. It was kind of hard on his pop. But I just bent close to his face, you see, until he finally got energetic enough to swat me. At which moment I backed up a trifle, you know. He did a long calm lag. He looked at me. All of a sudden he says, ha! Ha! So I put my face close to his again, and he swatted me even more energetically, and this time he burst out into a roar of laughter. And after I did this half a dozen times, he felt different about life in general. Fixed up a cat like that one time. Had this little cat that would have run if a mouse had come along. And the fact was, this cat was a little calico. And the reason I picked up this cat, name was Mauser. The reason I picked up this cat is one morning I went out and I looked in the mailbox and there was a $700 check and I looked down below the mailbox and here was this calico cat. They're supposed to be good luck, so I needed some randomity that day. So I said, well, a cat is a good luck piece, and gave the cat an intelligence test. I actually did. I took the cat down through a mazeful basement and took him out into the backyard and then went up into the house again. There was the cat. Bang. Followed me right up. Backtracked the maze. So I said, this is a very bright cat, but this cat was scared. A real frightened cat. Well, there was a fellow around that time, I suppose he's still around, who was an editor of a science fiction magazine. He didn't like this cat. And he used to shoot cats and things like that. So he'd come down to the house, and he'd sit there, you know, and he'd see the cat sleep over on the hearth or something like that. He'd give it a booch, you know. And the cat would go off and feel sorry for itself. And so I thought this over, and I thought of all the cats that he had sent to back through the between lives areas and into new kittens, and I decided something ought to be done about this. So I worked out a process many years ago. I worked out this process merely by which I would put out my fingers and invite the cat, and telling you this is a gag, but actually it's fairly important information for kids, animals, and so forth. Put out my fingers, you see, until the cat would very timidly advance one paw delicately in my direction, which moment I would slowly take my fingers away so as not to frighten the cat. Cat, think this over. I put my fingers up there, not quite so close, and the cat again would sneak one paw toward my fingers, you see, and then hook it a little bit. And I'd jump back. And we kept this up until that cat was 9 feet tall. I did this over a period of about 3 days, and then this chap, this editor, came down to the house, and he sat down in his accustomed chair. The cat was, as usual, asleep in the, on the kindling wood, and he reached over with his foot to boot the cat out, and almost didn't have any foot left. This worried him, and he started to get tougher about it. But, you know, he could only get 8.5 feet tall. So the upshot of it was that Mr. Cat was an extremely healthy, ill-mannered cat. And as time went on, why, I could see the stature of the editor drop and drop and drop. Finally, when the editor was 8 inches tall and the cat was 15 feet tall, I called halt, and I would lock the cat up after a while. This is a process which is workable on psychotics, horses, anything you couldn't get into communication with easily. And it is the key process. It's just as easy as that. If it took you half a day to get them to move a half an inch towards you, why, at that moment, you would back up so as not to startle a person, you see. And you would find now that they would move an inch or two towards you. But if it took you half a day to get them to move that first half an inch, you have that person on the way to recovery. What have you asked the person to do? You've asked the person to advance outward. And there you have the keynote of what space is. Space, and advance outward. Viewpoint of dimension is what it is in the field of perception. That's in the field of perception. But you know that there are people that try to make space with the entire no to sex scale. People try to make space below the level of lookingness, which is where space is made. They look, you see, and have space. If they don't look, they don't have space. If you don't believe that, just close your eyes and you don't have any space. You think that the space is still there. You hope it's still there. But then we go down into emotion. And did you ever know anybody who made emotion make space for them? Can you think of anybody offhand who made space with emotion? Any member of your family make space with emotion? You ever know a top sergeant that made space with emotion? Well, now, there are many people who make space with effort. You know, they have a place in the house because they work. only reason they have to get out of the house is to go to work. So they're making space with effort. And then we get down below that point, and did you know anybody who tried to make space with thinking? You know, they think themselves in space. They kind of change their mind and so forth. Yes, you know somebody. And now we go down into symbols and speech. And you know that here we've hit the human race. They try to make space with words, you know. Did you ever see a little kid make some space? Well, here's a test you could make. You put the little kid in the house all day. At the end of that day, they're trying to make space with sound. Words, yells, something of the sort. They have been compressed by the house. And the more they are compressed, that is to say, held in by the barriers of the house, well, of course, the more anxious they are to have some space. If you were... When you were a kid, maybe sometime or other, you could remember going outside and just yelling like hell. Just yelling, that's all. Just for the joy of yelling, you might say. You were making space, you see, with words, symbols, you might say. Sound. What level would this betoken particularly? A person who can only make space with words is having a very difficult time of it and won't make space with words. But just some more of that. Do you ever know anybody who tried to make space with eating? With food. A cook's trying to make space with food. Your mother probably tried to make space with food. There's a Armour's Packing Company that tries to make space with food and so forth. And it turns around that people who get very, very fat indeed are actually making space with food. That's another method of making space. And you look around in life, you find out a lot of people are trying to make space with sex. Freud did. One example. Promiscuity is what the society calls it, trying to make space with sex, you know. They go running all over the society, trying to make love to everybody. They're making space with sex. They're trying to make future space, though. And as space drops below the effort band, people then try to make future space. They try to fix it up so they will have some space in the future, even though they don't have any now. It comes down from present time, and really pretty well out of present time, we drop into and below the effort band. Now we're out of present time, we're making space in the future. But a psychotic can only have space in the past. So they can only look into the past. And the neurotic can only look into the future with anxiety, but it's still space. You know, oh dear, what's going to happen to me? I don't know. I'm so worried about it. I'm upset. I'm worried. So on, making space into the future. And so we have individuals, one after the other, having different modus operandi for substituting something from emotion down to sex. For looking. And they don't look in present time. They look into past time or future time, so forth. But they have made a substitution here. And they know they can't look. It's dangerous to look. If they did look and did make some space, who knows what would occupy it. They've had that experience already, right after they got married. And so on, their mother-in-law showed up. They were looking then. Something occupied it. Time after time on the track, an individual has decided to really make some space, and then all of a sudden he was looking at something he pretended he didn't know was there. That's a surprise, too. Well, here, in every case where you have an individual having difficulty, he is not looking to make space. He's doing something else to make space. And if he can look to make space, it follows he can do almost anything else he wants to. But the first condition he must have there is that he has to be able to make space by looking. And this is the main concern of an auditor. Now, if we get him to make space by looking, we, of course, have brought him very close to knowingness. But making space by looking, of course, is below actual knowing. There we look to find out. But if a person is unwilling to look to find out, he's unwilling to look to make space, he'll find out he doesn't have very much space. The whole difficulty in any case is dependent then upon perception. And perception is the keynote, the ability to look. Now, this book, which is the Scientology workbook, is gauged to do nothing but remedy that fact. It's based on viewpoint straight wire. The reason that is not being used on you in a group, and the reason why it is not a group process, HC is a better group process than viewpoint straight wire. The reason why it is not used on you, it is too tough. It's too difficult. That's for an individual to do in a group. We have this, he can do it all right, but he gets communication lags, and it sometimes takes him a long time to think of the answer. And we could fully verify that simply if I started in here with section 6. And as we started in at the top, I asked you to give a question you wouldn't mind asking. You wouldn't have any difficulty thinking of that one. So on, but that's just to get the case oiled up a little bit. And a thing you wouldn't mind knowing, that wouldn't be too bad. But as we get down the line, you talk about communication lag. It's a very good thing for auditors using this process to be conversant with the book of Job. That's their textbook for viewpoint straight line. Because they ask the question, and thereafter, the preclear is trying to answer it. I mean, it might, 3 hours later, the preclear might still be trying to answer that first question. Eventually, you'll get it answered. And then you'll get it answered again and again and again and again, and all of a sudden you'll feel fine about the whole subject. Why? You made him look at it, that's all. And it took him a long time, and he's very hesitant, and so on, to find something it would be safe to look at. Now, all of this processing here is built around lookingness. Everything in, really, the Scientology workbook is built around lookingness. We've had an enormous amount of success with this on individual cases. Where an auditor has broken down on it and has not achieved success in it, he just didn't himself exhibit enough patience to wait those communication lags out, which is why I'm talking to you about this book. There is something to know about this book, and that is space is a viewpoint of dimension, and you're trying to get an individual to look. Whatever the question said, you're trying to get the individual to perceive. And as you go down the list, you will find that the individual has blocks, actual barriers, between himself and anything he might view on the subject. They are just as solid barriers to him before you start processing him as that wall over there is solid to his body. These barriers are solid barriers, and he just, if you were just to let him go, you didn't work these processes on him, and he walked around with all those communication lags, he would feel himself tremendously restricted. He would feel himself unfree or trapped. What is the definition of freedom? Freedom is the ability to go and come as you please, to think what you please, anything. But what it essentially means is unrestricted. And what are barriers? They are things which restrict people. Now, you're actually removing the barriers from the minds of men when you process them with such a thing as viewpoint straight wire. You're actually removing barriers from his mind by permitting him to do what? To plow through them. Now, if he's successfully plowing through a barrier, which is to say he's sitting there, he's trying to answer this question, he's trying to find one thing, or he's just trying to get the question framed enough so that he can find just one little tiny thing that it would be safe for him to look at, or all right, or he wouldn't mind seeing about this or about that, he's going straight through a barrier. And if you as an auditor could conceive him to be going through a barrier of the mind, to receive that answer, you would then see exactly what a communication lag is and what he's doing. It's how long does it take him to pneumatic drill through that wall. Now, lying back of this is the fact that individuals in life run into walls. They run into distances they can't cover. And these things make an impression upon them. If any time you were to run into a brick wall in an automobile at 60 miles an hour, I'm sure that you would know it. You'd have an idea of having run into it. And you would say, gee, I sure know that. Whatever else I'm uncertain about, I'll know that. And that's certainty by impact, which we cover in 16G of the journal. All right, certainty by impact. He has some certainty then. But what's he do with it? He uses it as a barrier of the mind. He takes these barriers that exist in the physical universe, which is his playground, you might say, and takes them and he builds them again in his mind. He takes a picture of a barrier and then uses that picture. When you're processing facsimiles, all you're trying to do is rub out fear of barriers. The whole goal of Dianetics is summed into that phrase. Wipe out the fear of barriers by showing them that he can erase these barriers in his mind. Well, these barriers exist in the mind. They could exist as impediments, as engrams, as facsimiles, as anything you wanted to call them, but they are actually either barriers of great distance, which is to say, gee, I just know I'd never live long enough to get there, or barriers of flow, such as trying to swim, you see, a roaring torrent, or barriers of solidity, or barriers of mystery. You just wouldn't dare go through the area because there's no telling what might happen. Now, these are the kinds of barriers they are. And each one of these barriers inhibits looking. An individual who is confronted with a vast distance of a couple of billion trillion light years is, of course, incapable of looking across that distance and seeing the other side of that distance with any degree of reality. And the individual who is confronted vis-a-vis messed eyes with a wall is not able to see through that wall. And an individual looking down a long, winding tunnel which might contain alligators or Lord knows what, he's confronted with a barrier too. And an individual who is looking at an electronic field of some sort or another, electronic waves dancing in all directions, the idea of going through it is bad. Just like back in Kansas, that's a state in the United States. It's they're going to take it into the Union, I think. It sits out there on the Mississippi or the Missouri, or maybe both. It's a very nice state. I know. I was there when I was a few weeks old. I left hurriedly. I went back again when I was somewhat older and left again, mostly because of this. It gives you an unlimited distance in all directions with no obstruction to your view, you see. So you get this unlimited distance all around you. You know, it's flat. Upsetting. There are a couple of hills in Kansas. I know somebody who's been there will tell me that, but anybody who's accustomed to the Rockies wouldn't notice them offhand. And this vast distance is coupled with the fact that they have an energy barrier that they turn on there every once in a while in hailstones. And I had a hailstorm while I was there of 125 mile an hour wind and 25 pound hailstones. Now, automatically starting with that as a basis, you see, almost anybody from Kansas would be bound to turn out a liar. Because that storm, by the way, was chartreuse. So you see that this, as Mark Twain once said about river pilots, the truth wasn't in them. So here they have this vast barrier, and they have energy barriers, the barrier distance, energy barriers, and so forth, and it's just too uncertain life is of all. It's just too terrible to confront. Well, now in Arizona, there's a lot of energy barrier too here in the summertime. It isn't as bad as one might think because it's a dry climate and all the buildings are air-conditioned and so forth. But if you were to be out there during the summer months of June, July, and August, if you were dull enough to spot theta-wise some of these buried treasures which are out here, and there are plenty of them, by the way. But if you were to spot one of these things theta-wise and then be dull enough as to lug a body over to it, you would never get to the point where you would put a shovel in the body's hands. I assure you of that. That is an energy barrier, if you can recognize heat as an energy barrier. Darkness, too, is an energy barrier of a different kind. It's an absence of energy barrier, and that in itself is a mystery. Of course, a mystery might also have energy in it, but it certainly doesn't have much light in it. Now, these are the barriers which exist in the physical universe, and an individual who fixates upon the physical universe and is using the physical universe for his problems gets into this kind of a situation. He gets these things mirrored in his mind, and when he tries to think, he tries to go through this kind of barrier. Is it there? Well, it's there to the degree that he needs problems, but it isn't there any further. Now, you tell an individual, let's look at something. And he says, I know I can't look at that because I have barriers right here in front of my nose. I have them under my chin. There is some kind of a vast distance up above me, and the environment is flat against the back of my head. So what chance have I to look at anything? I can open my eyes and see what my eyes tell me are there, and that's always been good enough for Grandpa. Why isn't it good enough for you? The idea of him, though, sitting in the middle of the head trying to see in some fashion is a very, very upsetting thing to him. If you ask him to suddenly start looking at things. The fascinating part of it is, you see, you can see much better exteriorized than with messed eyes. Now, the reason why people who exteriorize and get processed for a little while occasionally don't get up to that level easily is because they consider the problem to be quite important. That is to say, they still need the problem, and they will look at facsimiles or pictures rather than the environment because the environment might be dangerous, and the pictures they know, being of past objects, are safe. And so they're still consulting safety in looking. So they take a picture of something and look at the picture. The truth of the matter is, an individual exteriorized who's in fairly good condition, who is not too upset about duplication and so forth, will see far, far better than anyone can see with messed eyes. Now, you're asking, however, an individual to step up and assume that level of sight. And viewpoint straight wire is one of the things that gets him there. Viewpoint straight wire, D have and do straight wire, which is just a variation of it. Well, you're trying to get somebody up to a point where he can look. If men had looked, instead of figuring, back through the ages, they would have had Scientology a long time ago. The whole problem of the mind was simply that. Let's not think about it. Let's look. Look, don't think, is the way you solve any problem. If the last time your car broke down, or the last time you had to repair any machinery around the house, you had looked, instead of trying to figure what was wrong with it, you would have repaired it in about a tenth the time. This is almost invariable in handling mechanical problems, looking instead of figuring. The society is educating itself continually that it should stand back and figure instead of look. Well, figure is the way you avoid looking. An example of this one time, quite some time ago, I took a motorcycle's whole ignition system to pieces, part by part, because it wasn't working. Then I found out the battery terminal wasn't connected. It took me some hours to put that ignition system back together again. All I had to have done in the first part was simply go around and take a look at the motorcycle. You know, just look. And all of a sudden, I would have seen there. Instead of that, figure. You turn a light switch, and the lights don't go on. So now let me think. Now, the most disastrous machines which are built in America, in terms of mechanical difficulties, I hope nobody from that corporation is present, and I'd better not mention the name of the International Business Machines Corporation. is because somebody might connect it up and they might get the idea that I say their machines are terrible. No, their machines are not terrible. They work within the frame of reference that they're supposed to work. They do a pretty good job of it. It could be done about 1,000 times simpler and a lot less noisily. And then the machines could run longer without breaking down. But otherwise, they're good machines. Of course, they're somewhat overpriced. But you see, I'm not knocking the corporation in any way except this. You always get into, let me use a Texas technical word. They do things big down in Texas, you see. Everything is big. We found out how big Texas was the other day. Talking with a Texan, you know I'm married to a Texan. We finally found out how big Texas was. It's 3 times the size of the United States. And they have a word down there. They have a word down there to be more descriptive of fighting than fighting. They call it a hassle. The only hassle that anyone could possibly have with international business machines is that they never fix anything. They just stand around and figure. They've got these huge signs all over their factories, all over their repair yards, you might say, their offices, every place, every executive, every mechanic, he's faced with this word, think. Well, that's just gorgeous. Think. They're supposed to fix things. Had nothing to do with thinking. I suppose that was the inventor of the slow-down, stretch-out system also invented that one. And here we have individuals in life doing this same thing. They get out of repair. Their equipment gets very scarce. They work their automaticities overtime and so forth because all they want to do is sit back and think about it. Of course, it would be a very disastrous thing if the Thetan started looking at the automaticities of the body which were out of repair. They would do one of two things. They would either go back into repair or they would blow up. One of two things. But the automatic machinery with which a Thetan and a body is surrounded, on which it's depending every minute of the day and night, is very liable to breakage and so forth. The only way to repair it, really, is look at it. Now, it's a strange thing, isn't it, that you can get somebody 2 feet back of his head and ask him, after you've given him some other drill source to stabilize him and take the shock off, ask him if he has anything wrong with the body he'd like to fix up, you know, and he looks. And if he can really look, all he has to do is look at it. Quite remarkable. That's really all he has to do. And having looked at it, it's fixed. This is not something you can't argue with, because any auditor that's used exteriorization processes on psychosomatic ills realizes that the psychosomatic ills go away as easily as the person can look. And when he patches up a person's ability to look from new points of view and so on, he patches up the body. It'll get to a point after a while, I suppose, that we will have to invent ways and means to dispose of bodies, because the Thetans go on patching them up all the time, why everybody will get immortal. It'll be dreadful, horrible. What do you do in using somebody else's mock-up anyway? Why don't you run your own mock-up around? Easy to do. So we have this workbook devoted to that direct and immediate goal. Now, there actually isn't in this workbook any section at all on one thing, and that is exteriorization. It doesn't talk about exteriorization. One of the reasons why it does that is to take it sort of easy with the public. If you told the public they could go out of their heads very easily, they'd know you were out of yours. So, we have in viewpoint processing, we have in this, process which, if you kept it up and just went over the section, and then went over section 7, which is B, have, and do straight wire, over again, and then viewpoint processing over and over again, and so on, and just back and forth,
with those two, and also, by the way, you've already done five with the Section 5 of the case, you would get somebody exteriorized sooner or later. That's about all there is to it. Now, what is the keynote of being able to look? It's being safe. So we run into the common denominator of existence. The dynamic principle of existence is survive. That is part of a career which starts with create, goes through survive, and winds up with destroy. Survive is only part of that curve. Create, persist, destroy. Survival, persist, same thing. So that's the cycle of action of the messed universe. Things are created, they persist a while, and then they are destroyed. That's the cycle of action. Well, life gets up there on that peak, and they want things to persist and survive, and that is the primary game life is playing. Survival. That's its game. And a life unit, a space energy production unit, actually can do nothing but survive. It can forget, but it, just because it forgot, there's no reason it stopped surviving. That's all it can do. So naturally, its game is to try to make hard work out of survival. And that's the only game it can play. When it gets down to a certain point, makes hard work out of survival. It can play other games than this, above that level, you understand? But life, as we consider it in forms, in a society, Homo sapiens and so forth, that's the game he's playing. What can I do to survive, not to survive, to survive, not to survive, to survive? You see a kid out here who has never learned to ride one turn down the road at 115 miles an hour on a motorcycle. He's trying not to survive like mad. You see another fella learning how to ride one first so that he can survive. Same game. Two different sides. Now, you find somebody who's getting very, very successful in life, and all of a sudden he blows his stack. He does something peculiar. And the next thing we know, why, he's very unsuccessful in life. Well, he just got too close to a complete solution of survival. And he backs right off from that solution. He don't want that solution. If a person got into the solution point where they would have total survival from there on out with that one viewpoint, they'd say, yeah, no. You notice what happened to you and I was running duplication on you yesterday? How would you like to look at the same thing forever? Be aware of the passage of time and yet have nothing else to look at than just one thing. I've said that to a pre-clear too, and he's actually just slumped in his chair like that. Too much. So it's a contest of keeping the mock-up without having to keep the mock-up forever. You know, survive forever without surviving forever. That is the game life's playing. So the keynote of this game is safe. Where would it be safe? And you get into universe processing and universe processes, which we're going to cover shortly. But where are things safe? That is to say, where would they endure? Where could we put this thing so it would continue to endure? That is what we mean by safe. Also, we mean this by safe. Where could we put it so it wouldn't cut us to pieces or burn us up? That's the other definition of safe, which means the individual is concerned about whatever mock-up he is protecting at the moment. One likes to get a fragile mock-up, you know, and then put it around so it's not quite safe so that he can make it safe. That's the game life plays. And universe processes and processing, of course, picks that up and hits it directly. But more about this workbook. We have, in any case, a limited number of processes which can be used by an uninstructed individual. A very limited number today. We have learned better than to expect, all of us, I'm sure, have learned better than to expect, that we could get somebody to read a book and then have him process an engram correctly.
That would be a pretty rough thing to do. We've been over the humps on that. We know about that. It's too complicated. That's the trouble with it. Another thing is, it isn't a high enough level goal to produce fast or optimum reactions, because you're taking the barriers and scraping them out one at a time, you see. You're shaving off layers off barriers one at a time. And the horrible part of it is, although people will get better running engrams, the more you validate engrams, the more engrams are liable to be solid. Because we have this whole problem of granting of beingness, which you will see more of when I run on you, Lord help you, the third step of procedure 30, granting of beingness. Well, if we grant beingness, grant life to things, and then they come true, then any process should continue in the direction that we are granting, that we want to grant life. In other words, we should process in the direction that we want to grant life, you see, not process in the direction where we're restraining life from being granted. And so we get such things, viewpoint straight wire. What would it be safe for you to look at? Well, the truth of the matter is, it's safe for you to look at anything under the sun, moon, or stars. Now, the mock-up you happen to be protecting at the moment might be damaged by it, but you will never be. So, you're processing directly toward the truth. It's safe for you to look at anything. And, therefore, people have a tendency to line themselves up better with the truth. So, a simple process which pointed directly toward the truth, that it's safe to look at anything, would, of course, be rather easy for somebody to run who was not well trained. And if it were a very elementary process and the person did not veer off of the actual commands given here, why, you would find yourself with a tremendous advance on the part of the preclear, and that is the case. The preclear does advance tremendously with these processes. Now, the only thing he'd really have to know is about communication lag. He'd have to know enough to keep his mouth shut while auditing, while the preclear was busting through a lag. He'd have to know enough to know what a communication lag is. And so over here on page 3, it says, to clear a question. Says, pre-clears take longer and shorter periods to answer questions. This is communication lag. The pre-clear is as unable or unclear on a question as he takes time to answer it. Clearing a question means that the question must be asked over and over until this time lag in answering is gone. Well, that is a terrifically clear statement about clearing a question. Well, what's happening? By asking these questions, you ask an individual to stare straight at those things which block him from viewing. And having asked him to stare straight at them, don't think you're going to get an instantaneous response. If you were to take somebody and go all the way down the list and get an instantaneous response on every single question in this whole book from beginning to end, you would have had it clear in the first place and he wouldn't even be in a body. That'd be the end of that. But where an auditor hits a communication lag, he just asks one question. Let's see, do you like dogs? This is not a sample question. I'm just talking here, and I don't want to drop a lot of people into a comm lag. And by the way, that's not a joke. That's the truth. These questions just drop most of the people that you ask them of just into a terrific comm lag. You would say to this individual, do you like dogs? And he what did you say? Do you like dogs? The auditor would say very politely. Sometimes. Now, that's exactly what your preclear is going to do in the chair.
Now, if you as the auditor started in this way and you said, do you like dogs, you know, and he went blank, and then you said to him, I said, do you like dogs? Why don't you answer me? Speak up. Yap, yap. bow wow. Your preakler not only wouldn't get clear, he'd have a bunch of new barriers in there, too. So while an individual is drifting through the communication lag, the most an auditor does is to repeat the question when asked for or when he thinks the preakler has lost it utterly. That's the most an auditor does all the way through. He doesn't do any more than that. And then he asks the question again and again, same question, again and again and again and again, until the preakler is no longer taking a lot of time to answer it. And he finally gets to a point of where you can say, maybe the dozenth time, he says, well, do you like dogs? And the preakler says, oh, I can take them or leave them alone. And now you've got an instantaneous response as close to it as you need to get along in life. That's clearing questions. That communication lag factor is tremendously interesting. It is entirely different from boil-off. If you're acquainted with boil-off, boil-off, the preakler hits, he's used up too much havingness. That is to say, he's burned up too much energy. He simply goes to sleep. The way you would do that is to remedy havingness, more or less, as it's done here in the group auditor's handbook. There's a section in there on remedying havingness, and there's also some sessions on remedying havingness. That is to say, you get him to mock up some energy in some acceptable form or other and pull it in, and his boil-off goes away. Boil-off, he just goes to sleep. That's different than a communication lag. Communication lag, he just bog. He's alert. He feels stupid. He's puzzled. He doesn't know what he's gotten into. He's trying to answer the question, but he can't quite make anything connect with anything. And that's a barrier you hit. So you should recognize it. And you should just ask the question again until he's no longer hitting that barrier. What are you actually doing? You're stringing straight wire, which is why it's called straight wire, from cause to effect. One line. And when he has a communication lag, he is actually going through thousands and thousands of C to E's, C to E's, C to E's. You know, thousands of causes, thousands of effects. They're all mixed in, bundled up. They don't join to each other. He's going over various circuitous routes. He's going through this and he's going through that. That wall over there is being used as a communication interrupter. It is interposed between the exterior and this room, and it is interposed between this room and the exterior. It's a communication interrupter, is what it is. And if you examined it very carefully, not like an electronic physicist or somebody in chemistry today is trying to examine, saying an atom is all mocked up that has electrons and neutrons and morons. If you examined it, you would find that when you put an impulse into any one part of it, you would get an impulse out of any other part of it. In other words, it's a complete communication short circuit. Anytime a communication goes into that, it has a tendency to wake up every other communication particle in it. In other words, it gets completely non-directional. When you look at it, if you were to throw a flashlight beam on it, you'd find the flashlight beam wouldn't even bounce off of it regularly. If it hit the surface would have to be mirror smooth, and even then you wouldn't get a complete bounce back of the rays. In other words, look at what a wall is. It's a communication interrupter, and it is probably composed of nothing but factors and intentions. The communications must be interrupted. When you get somebody who's tremendously solid, this is the one thing he's fixed on in life. Communications must be interrupted, one way or the other. And one of the ways he's liable to interrupt communication, simply talk at you. Brr, wow, wow, yap, yap, on and on. About nothing. That is, by the way, the keynote when a communication wall is being put up by a preclear. It's non-sequitur and doesn't necessarily relate to the subject at hand. He's just putting up a barrage. He's trying to make a defense out of speech or something. And that is a communication lag, too, which is why I'm bringing it up.
You'll sit down, you'll open your workbook up, and you'll come over here, you'll get to your first section. You'll say, all right, now why don't you? And he'll say, you know, I knew a fellow one time that practiced something like that, and it was a system in yogiism, only it wasn't quite yogiism. He was my uncle, and he married my aunt. And, my aunt had an awful lot of trouble with dogs. And had lots of trouble with dogs all the time. And that's one of the things that worries me a great deal. And so you say, you're trying to ask him to locate one wall. How do you handle that communication lag? That's a communication lag. It's an audible lag. How do you handle it? Just sit there and wait till he shuts up. Then you say, locate one wall. If you answer any part of the communication which he's giving you, you've gotten into this tangle of communication. See, and here you go, and you'll go no place. Be pleasant, be polite, nod. If you said no or something or shut up, like he'd go out of communication. You want to keep him in communication, because when he's doing that, boy, is he really out of communication. Now, I processed somebody for a couple of hours one time, and I got in 4 auditing commands. This person was quite a famous person. 4 auditing commands in the first 2 hours of auditing. Just sitting there waiting for it to simmer down to a point where I could get in the next command. And that's what you have to do with this. You stay in two-way communication with the preclear, and you keep asking the questions until he can answer them rapidly and spontaneously. Now, what's the key note of this, though? Viewpoint, straight wire, and lookingness. The key question of the whole thing. Supposing you asked somebody this list and it went brrr, and he just answered all of them brrr. He had no trouble with any part of it on this one particular list, and yet he was blind as a bat. The individual is on a very temporary occlusion, and you should ask him another question at that time, which is simply this. What in this room would it be safe for you to look at? What would it be safe for you to smell? What would it be safe for you to hear? What would it be safe for you to look at? To smell, to hear. What would be safe for you to look at? What would be safe for you to smell? What would be safe for you to hear? And they give you an answer each time, and all of a sudden their perceptions go on. The easiest thing in the world, turn on perceptions on a prequel. Viewpoint straight wire, which is covert methods of turning it on, or simply asking, hey, what's it safe for you to look at around here? Why don't you shut your eyes and find something in the room that's safe for you to look at? The fellow's liable to go a long time, and he's liable to find there's one dust mote that probably wouldn't ruin him to look at. So, there is the formula back of Viewpoint Straight Wire, and actually the formula back of this book. There will be other books, and there's one book coming up which will be a total individual session. It will take a pre-clear from one end and carry him through clear to the other end of processing. But that is a book. That is a book. It is not a workbook like this. But here we have this Scientology workbook. And in view of the fact that it's only 8 pages, its cost is practically nothing. It's things like this which will make Scientology roll and which will make it go. You put a lot of them in your pocket, somebody comes around and tells you all the troubles, like just pull one of these out and say, here, take it home and have your eldest boy read it to you. What do you know? It'll do him some good, too. Might louse him up and he'd have to come around and see you. But you'd be the expert in that case. But this was what we needed, something which individuals could do rather easily on one another and produce very marked results. Now, you realize, of course, that the group auditor's handbook can also be used on an individual. But it, in essence, is another type of workbook. It's a simpler workbook because it's intended for use on groups. But this workbook, the Scientology workbook itself, is intended for use on individuals. And let me stress this, not for use on groups. Don't use it on groups, please. Individuals only, because of the communication lag. Okay.